The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. 3 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 29th of July. You're very welcome along to the programme. We had a busy one yesterday, didn't we? 19 interviews in an hour. They said it couldn't be done. Maybe it shouldn't have been done. But anyway, we had a great feedback from our chat to the Marys who are contesting the Mary from Dunloe Festival, the Crown and Cabaret on Sunday. If you missed that, by the way, it's nice. It was a nice hour. You can listen back to that. But we've got today to get through today as well. And we've lots coming up on the programme, including that special package from Donna Marie Doherty. She was over with the O'Donnells for Boil the Kettle, raising money for Relay for Life, ETC. So we'll get a sample of the atmosphere there. I haven't heard the package, but should we play bingo? Will she say it was wet in the West, but it didn't dampen the spirits? Did she say it, Caroline? We'll see. Okay. If she did, we all have to take a shot, right? But we've got that and so much more besides. If you want to WhatsApp or text the show, 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Comments at highlandradio.com. Don't forget to watch the show if it suits you. Maybe you're off work for the end of July or heading into August, or maybe you work in the home or work from home. You can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. And a lot of our guests join us either in studio or via video, so it's a visual experience for you. And we're across our Facebook pages as well. The Finn Valley Voice is out today, and they are saying, or advising you, to get ready for an extraordinary bank holiday weekend in Ballybuffet. The local community is coming together for a historic doubleheader of celebrations featuring Ballybuffet United's long-awaited 55th anniversary, the official opening of the state-of-the-art Dreen and facilities, and the vibrant return of Kim's Colour Fun Run. Full details in that article and loads of other stuff in that paper out today. An awful lot must have happened in our beautiful county 50, 60 years ago. Because we just seem to be marking an awful lot of events that are 50, 55, 60 years. There was just a bit of spell there where there was lots of people who were inclined to create something for their local community. Mary from Dunloe just mentioned it, 60 years in existence next year. And there's so much more that I just can't pull off the top of my head. But a lot of stuff must have been happening about 50 years ago. Or 60 years ago, because we're coming up to an awful lot of 60th anniversaries, whatever was happening. Maybe you're old enough to remember and can give us some insight. We'll start with the Irish Daily Star today, and this is a story of abuse, by the way. It'll only take a minute or so just to be conscious if there's any younger ears listening. I'm not going into any detail, but a man has been jailed for 12 years after subjecting 9 young victims to dozens of sexual crimes over a 17-year period. Predator Neil Ferry put 9 young victims, some who were as young as 5, through terrifying ordeals between 1981 and 1998. 17 years. Ferry, 69, of Ballyness, Falkara, was given a cumulative 15-year prison sentence with the final 3 years suspended. So we'll face 12. He's an older man, but I don't know, what kind of a message does that send out there? One of his victims said in an impact statement that her sense of safety and trust changed immensely after she was set upon by Ferry. I mean, maybe you are affected by that case and you're in a position, maybe you want to speak out, maybe about the sentencing or the process. It's completely up to you. I would never put any pressure on anyone in this space. But the jury found Ferry unanimously guilty on 18 counts of sexual assault, 10 of indecent assault, 5 of attempted indecent assault, and 1 of an attempted sexual assault. So effectively, he was sentenced to 17 years, is it? No, 17 years was the space of time covered by his crimes. He was sentenced to 12 years. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. We get these stories seemingly every single week, and a lot of them seem to slip under the radar, but that one certainly hasn't. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25,000. By 2030, do you remember, we'll all be driving electric cars, our houses would be insulated and we'd be having heat pumps. It's 26 now, and I remember back in 22 talking about some of these targets, and I was thinking, and I was saying on the radio, Seriously. But anyway, we have to up our game, apparently. The Irish Times reports that heat pump installation needs to increase twofold. Joke. It has to increase 20-fold, and the pace of general home retrofits must at least double if targets to improve the energy efficiency of the country's buildings are to be met, the Climate Change Advisory Council has said. The council, the government's independent advisory body on climate, also called for swift decisions on rules to allow apartment dwellers and renters to use plug-in solar panels. In other countries, you can quite literally go into the likes of Lidl and Aldi and you can buy solar panels and plug them in, but we can't do that here. I'm not sure how effective they are, but that's how accessible they are. I'd imagine there's some resistance within the solar panel industry as well, not just because it might take work from them, but if you're getting people to adopt to solar panels and they're adopting to a cheaper, lesser product, it's probably or potentially counterintuitive. I don't know if anyone's in the industry and can talk to that, let me know. But the Climate Advisory Group also said that there must be a clear plan for phasing out oil and gas boilers for heating by 2040 as required under EU law. I think we can get there on that one because, you know, the cost of some of this stuff is moving people away from it automatically. But in terms of the heat pumps are the things that really generally are very good, but you have to have a very highly insulated home. Am I correct in saying that? Is that how they work most efficiently when your house is effectively sealed? If they're talking about a 20 times increase in heat pump installation and just a doubling of retrofits, that doesn't align. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, there you go. They are the climate people. They must know. I'm not sure what it's like in Donegal at the moment. I did see a stat that pointed to us having quite a few GPs above the national average, but we still from time to time get complaints about people not being able to access their GP. But even within the county, you kind of know where there are hot spots where it's difficult for people, and then there's other places whereby, you know, they can get an appointment with ease. But nationally, acute GP shortages in the commuter belt and in rural areas are leaving people waiting up to 2 weeks to see their doctors. Commuter areas are among the worst hit as they're dealing with large sudden influxes of people moving into new housing developments, the Irish College of General Practitioners has said. GP numbers have failed to keep up with the growing population and are falling far behind the World Health Organization's recommended level of 100 GPs for every 100,000 people. Data from the ICGP found Monaghan has the worst GP coverage of any county, with about 50 GPs per 100,000 people, followed by Roscommon, Kildare, Kilkenny and Meath with around 60 each. With 4,900 GPs registered at the start of this year, the national average for coverage is around 90 per 100,000 people, or one GP per 1,100 people. But I think, as I say, I'll get the stat. I heard the stat, but I don't want to misquote it. But I think Donegal is above some of those counties I mentioned there. The legal aid row is continuing between those in the legal industry and the Justice Minister. Well, in the Irish Daily Mail, it reports that the Justice Minister has announced changes to the new legal aid scheme that sparked solicitor strikes, but said the flat rate will remain. The Law Society of Ireland said criminal lawyers would consider Jim O'Callaghan's offer. On July 1st, Mr. O'Callaghan implemented a flat fee of €520 for criminal legal aid in the district court rather than per appearance fees, which prompted industrial action. This has resulted in criminal cases being delayed. Solicitors had been given €240 for the first appearance and €60 on subsequent appearances. Well, Mr. O'Callaghan met with the Law Society of Ireland on Monday to hear about issues practitioners had with the reforms. And yesterday, he said the €520 for district court criminal legal aid cases will remain in place. But he said the payment of the flat fee would be split, so two-thirds would be paid at the start of the case and the remainder at the end of the case, or after 12 months, the case, or after the case, whichever is first. So I'm not in the know. I don't necessarily know why that might be beneficial, but there you go. And just a quick update on some advancement in the e-scooter law changes, because I know quite a few of you out there are interested in it. So what will change and how will it be implemented? Well, people on e-scooters who do not wear helmets and high-vis clothing will be hit with an on-the-spot fine of €100. Now, that'll stiffen your cuff. The new regulations will kick in next month. The Cabinet will today sign off on rules to crack down on the use of e-scooters. It comes after a worrying rise in the number of children being injured on the dangerous vehicles. And toy sports retailer Decathlon yesterday announced that it will remove all two-wheelers from sale at its stores across Ireland. Earlier this year, doctors in Ireland's Children's Hospital warned that e-scooters are now the leading cause of children ending up in ED. We have an issue here, of course, as well. We're seeing an increase in e-scooter admissions. We don't have the same amount of them, so we're not seeing the same problems. But the more e-scooters, the more injuries there are. And that's what it's going to be. So you're going to have to be careful out there, you know, because even the little ones, I would say, you know, because there are different types of e-scooters. There's some almost like the size of a car on two wheels, and there's others, you know, that are little toy ones, all electric. But if you've got a young one scooting around on them, I would love if the article covered exactly what would happen in that situation, because the instant question I have, you know, if it's a 15-year-old, who pays the €100? Is it mum and dad or mum or dad or whomever is the child's guardian? I don't know, because that's a loophole if it's not very clear what happens there. Right, let's remind you of the numbers for you to get in contact if you want to raise an issue or have an input into anything you've just heard there.
The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio. Text WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Call 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com.
Right, okay. We'll start off on a light note, because Daniel and Magella, they were on with us last week plugging the Boil a Kettle event, and I looked at the weather forecast at that time, and I have to say it was looking somewhat favourable. As it turned out, it was a very wet one, and down there was Donna Marie Doherty. Did you enjoy it?
I had an absolute blast.
Yes, I saw you say that, and I still don't, I can't figure out why you enjoyed it so much.
You know, it was just, everybody was in great form. Everybody was soaked, but everybody was having such a good crack. You know, like there was music going. Everybody was just in such good form. You know what I mean? Like it didn't really matter that it was raining.
Of course it didn't. No, and it never was going to matter.
No, not at all.
Of course. And what was the queues like? I know they were trying to move things, you know, quite quickly and all that jazz.
The queues were, they were like six people abreast. So they were, you know, they were like six people abreast, and they went the whole way down the lane. And now there was a shuttle bus situation from Keju, and they were coming in and out. Now, I was speaking to a man who was helping assist with the traffic, and he was saying that the queue just never got shorter.
Yes.
So it did, like, so it was like a conveyor belt. So it was, they were hoping to be finished up by 4, and it was nearly 8 o'clock.
Wow.
So
it was a long day, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Brilliant. But
We're going to hear it in the package, though, but it wasn't all locals, obviously.
No, I think the farthest away person I was speaking to was Scotland. Mm. There were people from Cork, a lot from Cork and Kerry, actually. Met an awful lot of people from Cork and Kerry. Everywhere, a lot from over Antrim down direction. You know, there was nearly every county accounted for in it. There were people who had like gone to the tees before, and whenever the chance came back up again to go to
the
game,
they haven't been running for quite some time.
No,
they.
This is the first in my lifetime.
Stay where you are. A texter says, "Morning, Greg. We had a fab day at Daniel's tea party. We were the care aged group in Remelton. We all had a great day, and we gave a donation of €1,000." There were 40 of them from Remelton, and as I say, they had a fabulous day despite the weather. We got lovely photos. There was lots of food. Yeah, talk to me about the goodies, Donna Marie.
They're fantastic. There was scones, packets, you know, the good biscuits.
Like the Sunday biscuits.
There was so many baked goods. Daniel was on about these buns that he had got at the Lenham Festival that he enjoyed them so much then that they got those up. I think that was with the Purple Velvet. They did a bit of catering, so they did. There was treacle bread. You name it. And it was there, and the ladies that were in behind sorting the tea, they were flat out. So they were,
and like, they put in the overtime, as you say, it was due to pack in at 4 and it ran to 8.
I think the latest that we've heard is that 18,500 has
it's
been raised.
Isn't it?
It is, and like that's definitely not.
I mean, they do work tirelessly, Daniel and Magella. There's just absolutely no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely not. No, and it really showed, you know, because everybody had said that he took the time, and Magella did as well. They both took the time to stop and to have a chat, which is probably why it went on so long. But when you know, when you have people waiting that long, of course you're going to want to stop and have a wee chat.
So we're going to listen to the package now. Looking forward to this. Thank you very much for that, Donna Marie.
Thank you.
You had fun anyway.
Oh, so I had a blast.
You can give your money back for that day's work. it's not quite how it works. Listen, thanks so very much indeed. And also, we've got some lovely images as well if you want to watch as you listen.
On a wet July afternoon, over 5,000 cups of tea were served in aid of Ready for Life at the home of Daniel and Magella O'Donnell. The revival of the iconic tea parties came back with people flocking from across Ireland and even cross-channel. It was all part of the Boil the Kettle for Ready initiative. First in the line was Eileen from Kildare, and she was no stranger to beating the queues.
Well, we came up last night from Kildare, and we had all the meat supporters on part of the motorway coming up, so it was great crack coming up. And we left the hotel this morning, and we were here at 9 o'clock.
Have you ever been at any of Daniel's teas before?
27 years ago, I was first in the queue about 27 years ago.
And did you ever think that he'd open up the doors again?
No, I didn't. I thought when he retired 26 years ago or whatever, 25 years ago, I thought that was it. But to have a back up today and to know it's for such a good cause, it was worthwhile coming the distance for it.
Davy Cowan of Ready for Life's an organiser, and he came up with the Boil the Kettle initiative. Having such a good response across the campaign over the summer, he says it's fitting to finish up here in Meanban.
It was an idea we had and the start of the year when we were looking to come up with a fundraiser, and we developed it from there with the Boil the Kettle appeal, which meant people in their own homes and businesses and came together and raised funds for Relay for Life, and all culminating today with Daniel's event here in Meanbad. And unfortunately the rain hasn't stayed off, but the crowds are here. The reports coming back from the parking areas that the crowds are still coming and the buses are flat out. So it's been a challenging experience today, but the crowd have been very patient and they've been very good, and they're here to have a word with Daniel and Magella, who have been great supporters of Relay for Life since the conception, and they hope they'll be with us for many years to come.
And there were crowds indeed. It's estimated 5,000 people, and I spoke to some of them who travelled to attend here.
My mother-in-law is from Donegal originally, so lives up in Crumlin now in the north, but my wife and I came over on Friday on the ferry and came down here yesterday so we could bring Sadie to see Daniel today. And it's been perfect because she's managed to get a photo with Daniel and her sister at the same time. So it's been other than the weather, it's been a successful wee visit.
Stayed up in the cottage in Annagry overnight, and we came down early this morning to join the queue. Of course, we thought we were first in the queue, but when we arrived, there was a lot of people in front of us, but we stood it out. We met lovely people, and we had great chat and crack in the queue.
Is there many of you here?
There's mum and daughter with her, and we met those six people from Ballycastle. We met them in the queue, so we endured the wait together and had great crack, bit of singing, and we got chatting to Daniel and Magella both. They were very accommodating, both of them, and I'm sure it was a long wait for them in the rain, and I told them I was soaked. I didn't really want a hug. I didn't want to soak them up. He says, oh, come on in here beside me, you'll be all right.
And just then, I'll let you go enjoy the rest of your tea then. Had you been to any of the teas before?
No, I've never been. They were away down at Crutch, was it? Kincashla? No, we've never been to the teas before. And we just heard it coming up one day on the radio, and I thought that'd be something nice to do, because we usually go up to the Gaeltacht area in the summer because the grandkids be up at the Irish College and Kalash the World, places like that. So we always come up every summer. So we decided we'd come up this time for Daniel's tea party, and that's why we're here.
I couldn't believe it. I left Sunny Malhead to come down here to Kincaxla to meet Daniel because of my daughter. But it's great to be here. It's great atmosphere. I've met best friends from Dublin. We're all under the one umbrella, but it's great.
That last voice many of you will know is Councillor Ali Farn. In Donegal, there's an esteemed sense of pulling together in times of need, and the next two ladies you'll hear from speak to that every day. Maggie McDade-Piper regularly fundraises for local causes, and Geraldine Mullen, who suffered the loss of her family in a road traffic collision at Quigley's Point, say the support for events like this is so important.
Not too bad, no, sure. Irish weather, four seasons in one day, so Daniel's worth it.
Now, you're no stranger to organising big events like this here, and the support's what means everything.
Well, really, for life, be very close to my heart. I'm an oncology nurse in the hospital, so the invaluable work that Relay for Life does for all the cancer patients and their families in Donegal. So only too delighted to come and get the cup of tea today with Daniel and Magella and support such a good cause.
Did a skydive a few years ago, Donnamara, for TG's Wish to Walk. And I have done a head shave for the Donegal Hospice. I have done, what else? I had my charity 60th birthday party there a couple of years ago. That was half between TG's Wish to Walk and the Donegal Hospice.
And getting the support whenever you go to the effort of organising these events, there does be a worry that what if nobody comes?
Oh yeah, well I'm lucky because I'm involved with Care of the Aged, Remelton. So I came with them and it's just fantastic.
The support was so much so that the event initially was scheduled to go from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock. But it was 7:40 whenever they seen off their last guest. Daniel and Magella were so grateful to everyone who called in and who donated.
We just can't believe the amount of people on a bad day. We wish the weather was better.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It hasn't dampened the spirit.
No, it hasn't dampened the spirit of them. It's dampened for me. I'm just very disappointed for everybody that has to stand in the rain. But what can you do,
What? I was speaking to them down there and they're saying it's all part of the crack. You know, everyone's going to remember the day that they came to Daniel and Magella. They got a cup of tea.
But it's a good cause.
It is.
And
it's
so
cause.
Great to be able to do it. And we're so grateful to all the local people that have helped this to happen.
Absolutely. They've a community effort, really.
So much work here. You have no idea.
Yeah. And the Relay for Life committee.
And people taking in. The Donegal Shores took in stuff. All the people. Kelly Hygiene, you call them. And the generators and
Purple Velvet.
And listen.
Too many to mention.
We got buns made from somebody out that I got one at the Lennon Festival. The lovely wee buns.
Purple Velvet. And all our local neighbours
and everything. They're all in there and they're making tea and they're people putting in pancakes and bacon and everything. It's just overwhelming.
And the cause, Magella, especially for you and for both of you.
Absolutely.
It means so much. I keep saying it,
one in two people are going to have cancer in their lifetime.
Unfortunately.
And that's a very, very high statistic, and I just don't know the people take it in. Like, there's four in our family, and two of my siblings have had cancer. So it's one in two are going to have it in their lifetime. So we all need to be raising funds for research so that it improves. And it is improving all the time, but it's an ongoing thing, so we need to keep at it.
That's the importance of days like this, even though it is raining. You know, the Relay for Life people are here, and you know, this money, some of it goes to services, but it's research that makes people live.
Perfect.
That's the important thing.
It really was a community effort, from the Gardaí doing the traffic control to the volunteers assisting with the guests and shuttle buses, and the Relay for Life crew, of course, were there as well, pitching in. 11-year-old Dara is a neighbour. And he was working incredibly hard.
Helping, so I am with Daniel and Magella. So I am, I just live down the road, so yeah.
You're hard at it. Are you looking forward to getting a cup of tea later?
Oh, sure. More than ready.
More than ready with the rain and all the hard work you're doing.
Oh, this rain's just bad.
But everyone's still very excited to be here.
Yeah. So it's all day hard planned, and fair play to them all for donating and all coming up. tear, like, so fair play to them all. Like.
All in all, it was a great day. Everybody was in good form. They got their tea, they met Daniel, and were absolutely delighted with the day that was in it. And I think all that's really left is a song from the man himself.
Everybody, stand beside me, stand beside me. For if I should lose you, I just couldn't get anywhere. Stand beside me, stand beside me. You're the only one who ever made me care. The one who ever made me care.
Brilliant stuff. Well done, Donna Marie. Brilliant package again, and some brilliant visuals that those of you watching the programme will have been able to see. So much fun and happiness, and Daniel walking through the crowd singing in the rain. But as all you could see was happy, happy faces, and that's what it's all about. 5,000 cups of tea were served at the home of Daniel and Magella. Over €18,000 now has been raised for Relay for Life. The money continues to come in. And it's that return of the couple's iconic tea party. People from all over the place. Fantastic, wasn't it? So thank you very much to Donna Marie Doherty. There was also some content too from Sinead Black, and it's all available for you to watch on our Highland Hub Facebook page. Right. Now, as you'd be aware, there's been quite a lot of concern about a downgrading of the fire service on Arranmore Island. We received a press release yesterday from the council. It's quite long, but I'll read the headlines for you. At the outset, it's important to state they say that there is no proposal to downgrade the voluntary fire service on Arranmore. The national policy with respect to fire cover on inhabited offshore islands is a non-blue light response with a focus on provision of fire detection equipment, fire extinguishers, fire blankets, training and public information as part of community safety focused capabilities. Donegal County Council Fire Service has provided the referenced equipment, training and information in compliance with this policy to the inhabitants of all of the inhabited offshore islands. The fire service has no plans to change the current system of voluntary fire service on the island, and the service will continue to be supported by Donegal County Council by way of recruitment and basic training to allow the voluntary service to meet the fire service response needs of the island. The Arranmore Voluntary Brigade has a complement of 5 voluntary firefighters and a mid-fire appliance that has, in essence, the same functional capabilities as those in the retained brigades, save that it carries a reduced quantity of water and does not carry a 13.5-metre ladder. So, effectively, they're saying nothing is changing. John Boyle is a former retained fireman. And what's your reaction to the way the council have outlined things there, John?
It's a little bit vague on the council's part. They're claiming they're not altering the voluntary capability of the fire service in Arranmore, which is probably true, but they are removing the 2 retained posts that were on the island. So if you remove 2 retained posts, you are obviously affecting the fire service. They are claiming there are 5 firemen at the moment on the fire service in Arranmore. There are actually 4 since I retired 2 months ago. They do meet some of the requirements, but they're continuously on about a red and blue light system on the islands. The only reference to islands, there is a document. It's called the National Directorate for Fire and Emergency Management. It's keeping communities safe. In that document, there's only 1 reference to islands, and if you will allow me, I'll read it to you. For isolated communities, such as those living on offshore islands, a fire service response will inevitably be delayed. And it goes on then to say good practice, prepare and standardise. So there is no reference to red lights on this document. Donegal County Council are claiming this has been done in name of efficiencies. I cannot see how this is going to be efficient when you remove the fire service or threat to remove the fire service. If the people on earn more are not willing to become entirely voluntary. Their threat, the Donegal County Council, Donegal Fire Service threat is to remove their service from the island entirely.
Mm. Well, the council says in their statement to maintain the complement numbers in the context of one recent, which I presume is you, and one pending retirement later in 2026, Donegal County Council Fire Service has identified five persons on the island who wish to join the volunteer service. Suitability testing is in the process of being organised. So according to the council, they already have people on the island interested in filling the posts vacated by you and another.
Yes, that is true. But there's a long, slow process to getting them qualified or trained as firefighters. There are assessments to be done, there are medicals to be done, and then there's training to be done. That training takes probably entirely, in its entirety, about 2 years. Now, if they had planned this correctly, they would have had people in place for my retirement and the other firefighters' retirement, instead of leaving it beyond the last minute. Mm. We are already down to four firefighters on the island. One is retained, three are voluntary. So that's four firefighters. And it's going to be 6 to 12 months before anybody comes online. Mm.
And the point I made on the programme last week when we were covering this earlier, the ideal situation would be that you'd have two retained, you know, four or five volunteers, and they'd sit on their hands for forever. The reason you put in place a fire service is for that one occasion, and we hope it's never, whereby there is an emergency and they are there and ready to go and to save lives and property.
Yeah. We had, I think, and I stand to be corrected, 6 or 7 call-outs last year. It takes us, most of our fires are got to within 10 to 15 minutes. So that fire is extinguished. It doesn't get a chance to develop and it's extinguished fairly quick on the island. If the fire service is removed from Arranmore or downgraded on Arranmore, there's no guarantee that Dunloe or whoever is brought in to Dunloe Fire Service, whoever's brought in to cover us, are going to be here within an hour. You let a fire burn for an hour. Mm. If it's, God forbid, in a home, you're not going to have much left after an hour.
In the press release, the council don't actually really reference the fact that the island is losing two paid positions. The outset, they say quite literally, and they say at the outset, it's important to state that there is no proposal to downgrade the voluntary fire service. I don't really see reference... I don't see any reference to the fact that two paid positions are being removed, and that is the case. Have they been lost or will they be lost as far as we're aware, John?
I have no idea. We have formed a community group to fight this. At the moment, my position has not been filled. We have one person paid, and the council are saying they're not going to replace the other firefighter. So therefore, we're going to have a fire service that, according to Donegal County Council, are going to be voluntary. I don't think Donegal County Council have thought this through. There's an awful lot of responsibility involved in the fire service. Who's going to take command of incidents? Who is command men? Who's going to tell people or tell men to go in, firefighters to go into a burning building, or what to do in the event of a gorse fire? There's no command structure going to be there. Donegal County Council are very vague. They are beating on about voluntary, voluntary, voluntary. The people in Arranmore do more than enough on a voluntary basis. We keep the whole of the west coast of Ireland, or Donegal, as safe as we possibly can through volunteering for the RNLI. Do we really have to volunteer for every single thing? We have bills to pay on Arranmore Island. Voluntary doesn't pay them. We do our best, but voluntary doesn't pay them. Voluntary, there are no voluntary firemen on the mainland. Would Donegal County Council like to make the entire county on a voluntary basis. Would they be happy? Would people on the mainland be happy with that sort of service? I doubt it very much. I would go as far as to say as I would think there may well be some sort of discrimination by Donegal County Council towards the firefighters and the people of Arranmore that's not there for firefighters and people on the mainland.
Okay, we'll seek further details from Donegal County Council in relation to this. As far as you are aware, I presume you were a retained fire person, a firefighter, and your position is not going to be replaced then effectively. You're going to be replaced, in inverted commas, by a volunteer, whenever that might be. We don't know because of the extensive training. Is there any tension on the island that people are putting themselves forward to be volunteer firefighters while there is a campaign to retain retained firefighters? I'm not trying to stir up, John, but it's not a massive community either, right? So is there any tension in relation to this?
There is none. There is none. There are people that have put their name forward, but there are people, and by all means, they're quite welcome to. I have no problem with them putting their names forward. But this is going to take time. And in fairness, Donegal County Council have taken advantage of a volunteer ethos in Arranmore. And it's just bit by bit by bit taking more and more and more. Mm. I think it's coming to a stage now where the people of Arranmore are going to have to stand up and are standing up to Donegal County Council, and they're going to pay all the members, all the people that become firefighters. We need to have parity with those on the mainland. It's just ridiculous at the minute.
Yeah, you make I make an amazing point there in relation to the RNLI out of Arranmore keeping the west of the county safe. God knows how many lives they've saved in a voluntary capacity over the years and continue to do so. John, listen, thank you very much for helping us understand that a little bit better. It's always good to speak to someone on the ground, and I really do appreciate it. John Boyle, recently retired, retained fireman. Looks like they're not going to replace him. There are people prepared to volunteer, but he makes the point, you know, someone needs to be in charge. Someone needs to be on the books because the buck has to stop with someone. So it's a pretty decent argument. What do you think? I think really it's time, if it hasn't been elevated already, to be elevated above the council, because the council seem to have their position there. So it'd be interesting to see what those perhaps higher up have to say about the whole situation. If you watch the news, you see what's happening in Ukraine with the Russian bombs there, the state of the sky. Unbelievable in terms of, you know, particles and pollutants and what have you. And in Russia as well, particularly it seems to be with the targeting of these Russian Amazon facilities, this dense black smoke covering entire swathes of the country visible from space. Go to Spain, wildfires continue there. The heat wave, which has just begun again, exacerbating the problem of smog and air quality. And the Bordeaux region of France also facing the same issues. Now, we have had wildfires in this country. Hopefully we escape them, but unfortunately we may not. And I suppose really we look at the damage and the impact it has on the wildlife and the ground, and the conversations about the threat to property here often. But I mean, it is having an impact on the quality of air that we breathe as well. Dr. Ciara Steeles, GP, a member of Clean Air Advocacy Ireland. Ciara, thanks so much for joining us as always. Good to see you.
Good morning, Greg, and congratulations to you as well.
Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate that, Ciara. So I wonder, but our defence against the air is close the windows, right? And in some places that's fine, and in others it's completely ineffective. What's your observations looking on and the impact this air will have on the people it's affecting currently?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really dramatic, the pictures that we're seeing from the wildfires in Spain and France. I think 400,000 displaced people. And, of course, wildfires can generate PM2.5, which is particulate matter, which really can be so small that it can penetrate deep into our lungs and cause lung effects, respiratory effects, increase in wheeze, exacerbation of COPD. But those particles can linger for quite a long time, and it's underappreciated the cardiovascular effects and impacts that can have acutely and as well as long term. So we're learning more and more as time goes by about air pollution, the effects it has on our health, not just the environment. And it's really important that we clean our air indoors, because there's a continuum between outdoor air and indoor air. And of course, climate change is exacerbating the number of wildfires that we're having abroad in very hot conditions, but also here in Ireland. And the Schlievenmann fires were sensed in Cork, for example, hundreds of kilometres away. The PM2.5, or the particulate matter concentration, was increased in Cork, and there was ozone breaches in the guidelines in Cork as well, according to the EPA website. So the health impacts are severe. They're both short-term and long-term. They do affect people in other countries, but they also affect us as well. They affect the outdoor air, but they affect the indoor air quality, as you mentioned too. So I suppose, what can we do about it? You know, I suppose in Ireland, between 2015 and 2025, there's been 300 wildfires logged. And across the years, that has been increasing incrementally, and with 59 of those occurring in 2025, over 30,000 hectares of wildfire burned land in Ireland during that time. And I suppose the EPA says that human activity can spark off a lot of those fires, and maybe we need to regulate that a bit more when we don't have rain. It just as we introduce a hose pipe ban when we don't have rain, maybe we could regulate human activity during those times as well, and reduce walking in those areas, reduce planned burning in those areas, for example.
Yeah, we've talked quite a lot about clean air in schools and how you can purify or treat the air so it's better to breathe. Obviously, we'd love to turn the tide on climate change. We'd love to see less wildfires. But I think we're going to have to live with them to some extent. Does that mean that we need to be putting more emphasis on the quality of the air that we breathe indoors so there is a respite? Maybe it's even in the home, certainly in workplaces, large factories, schools, etc. In other words, is this an opportune moment for you to emphasise the point of cleaning air in these congregated settings?
Yeah, well, we spend 90% of our time indoors. So it's really important that the air, most of the air we're breathing is indoors. A lot of our outdoor air pollution is breathed indoors. So it's really important to clean the air in those settings. I think wildfires focused our point on that, but also the pandemic has focused our point on the fact that we need to breathe clean air indoors. So high density, high occupancy settings can impact the health of more people altogether at once. HEPA filters and mechanical ventilation can clean the air that we breathe so that we can be assured that we're having healthy air. We can monitor the air. So wildfires make poor air quality visible, but the point that we want to drive across is that there's a lot of components of air, both outdoors and indoors, that can impact health. And once we regulate monitoring and mandate monitoring within those settings, we can see that temperature, humidity, ozone, PM2.5, volatile organic compounds can be measured within the air. And that once we see that they're breaching the WHO guidelines, then we can actually do something to regulate that. So increasing ventilation and increasing filtration can bring those effects down and can reduce the health impacts. We're not seeing the health impacts because we don't know that it's there. But once we know that it's there, we can change what we're breathing.
Yes, but it's difficult to get the message across. If you tell me, you know, that if I put my fingers in a doorway and the door closes, it hurts my fingers, and that'll happen once because I can look at my fingers and I can feel the sensation and the pain, and I'll not do that again. I think it's always difficult to articulate something that is invisible, and you know, if you are feeling the impacts of it 15 years down the line, you probably still wouldn't be convinced it was not heeding the advice of Dr. Kira Steele that found you in that position, if you know what I mean. But you know as certain with certainty, as much certainty as if I put my hands in a door and close it, I'll hurt my fingers, that breathing bad air will likely create problems for you down the line.
I think tragically, there's been some tragic evidence of that. You know, there's the tragic case of Ella Kissy Deborah in the UK, and she's the first person in the world to have air pollution registered as a reason for her death. It's actually on her death certificate. And that was relating to traffic pollution exacerbating her asthma condition, which ultimately and tragically led to her demise. So there's very real effects of poor air quality on our health. And I suppose what our aim to do is to highlight that before any further tragedies occur.
Yeah, OK. Thank you very much indeed. It'd be interesting to see what level of advice is being given in the likes of France and Spain at the moment in terms of air quality. I don't know if you have any colleagues over there or privy to that. Is this an important part of the public safety message over there?
Yeah, I mean, I think listening to the emergency reports, you know, following government guidance, putting HEPA filters into your house so that you can clean the air, having a safe room with closed windows that can be cooler, making sure that, you know, even your skin can absorb air pollutants, and making sure you're clothed. When the outdoor air quality does come back to pre-fire levels, then you can open the windows, make sure you clean your surfaces within your house, and make sure that, you know, people who have asthma and COPD have an extra supply of medication, and that if they do need to evacuate, they can take that with you. Consider an emergency pack, those type of guidance, I'm sure the health authorities are issuing to residents there.
Thank you so very much for your time as always, Ciara, and thank you for your nice message wishes as well. That's Dr. Ciara Steele, GP and member of Clean Advocacy Ireland. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number used by this listener who says, Greg, I was in Dunlow for the official opening. This must have been the Mary from Dunlow. Daniel on the stage with Michael English, with the rain lashing down on the stage, lights flashing through the rain, people young and old dancing and jiving in their coats and umbrellas. It was surreal. The O'Donnells are a legend. Yes, indeed, they really are. And thankfully, we recognise that at this point. You're very welcome back to the programme. And we're joined on it now by Independent Councillor Declan Meehan. Good morning, Declan.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. And it's to give us an update, and it's great to see a positive news update in relation to progress on the surgical hub. You know, sometimes I presume that everyone knows exactly what we're talking about, and it was such a high-profile story. But just tell us, and it was through a massive public and political campaign, what has been secured and what are we working towards and what impact is it expected to have?
Yeah, look, I suppose most of your listeners will remember, not least because of the coverage that Highland gave it at the time. Last year, we had got wind that the HSE had recommended for a surgical hub for the Northwest to be located at Sligo University Hospital. That brought about a campaign by GPs and hospital doctors, as well as public representatives and community advocates, to push for a surgical hub in Letterkenny University Hospital. That campaign was ultimately successful. You might remember it was the day after the All-Ireland final when it was announced by the Minister for Health in Letterkenny. So that surgical hub will provide for two operating theatres which are protected from surge capacity at Letterkenny University Hospital, which basically means, and unfortunately what happens currently is routine and elective day surgeries are routinely cancelled when the hospital is at increased capacity and when it's very busy. So a surgical hub actually prevents that. It's protected from surge capacity, and it means that regardless of what's going on in the main hospital, surgeries can continue. So the update that we got yesterday was confirmation from the HSE and the Minister for Health that a design team had been appointed in order to take the concept now of the surgical hub through the detailed design process with a view to lodging a planning application in the first half of next year.
So it is moving exactly how you might anticipate it to move. And before we talk about what that means, you know, when we heard from Mr. Michael Sugrue, amongst others, this wasn't just necessarily about making the hospital, you know, function better and provide better services. This was about the very future of the hospital and its status as, you know, the main hospital well invested into in Donegal. There was also issues about recruitment and retention. And I was told off the record, so to speak, that already, you know, there are signs that people are coming to work in Letterkenny because they see what the future holds. So maybe recruitment, you know, we can compete better in terms of recruitment with other hospitals elsewhere because of, you know, it'll be a better place to work, but more opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. This was very much tied into the future of Letterkenny University Hospital, because if you constantly have surgeries being cancelled, you find it very difficult to recruit surgeons to work in that hospital because, you know, nobody wants to be sitting twiddling their thumbs. Surgeons want to operate. And that's good for our patients across Donegal. When we get the surgical hub, that will be the case. And certainly through questions I have raised at the Regional Health Forum over the past year since that announcement, you can see already the beginnings of an improvement around recruitment and retention at Letterkenny University Hospital. It's not perfect. It's not absolutely full capacity in terms of what we need there, but it is improving. So this was a really important step to secure the future of Letterkenny University Hospital. And it's great to see this now progressing in the right direction.
Yes, and just to pick up there where we left on, planning application, if things continue to move as they are now, to be lodged next spring. And there's nothing really to suggest that there might be a delay if that all goes well in starting construction here, because we are seeing, you know, work in the surgical hub space, although there are additions to this, happening in the funding, the budget and the will seems to be there. So if we get through planning, God forbid there's not some sort of a global collapse or anything, there's nothing really at this point to suggest that it won't continue to proceed at the pace we might expect. Not as quick as we'd like, but still in a timely fashion.
Yeah, look, I think that that's of critical importance. I think that we have a commitment from government. It was hard won and hard fought for to have that funding ring-fenced and allocated for a surgical hub at Letterkenny University Hospital. So as you say, there's nothing to suggest that that won't happen should everything go well over the coming months with the detailed design process. Again, there's no reason to think whether there'll be any difficulties there, and then through the planning process as well. So it isn't coming as quickly as we would all like, of course not, but it is progressing.
Okay, finally, before I let you go, because you are a rep for the Downings area as well, people will be able to cast their minds back to the weekend whereby, you know, a lot of people in that area, regulars and businesses, sorry, residents and businesses felt, you know, somewhat abandoned really by the authorities, in that they were almost left to their own devices, while it seems like, you know, hundreds if not thousands of particularly young people descended on the Downings area to sleep in cars on the beaches elsewhere. And there's some horrific stories of damage to vehicles, public order, encroachment onto property, etc., etc. We're coming into a big weekend now. The Downings Festival is on. It is a long weekend as well. This time, there's a bit of proactive activity in terms of beach access, but also to try and stop, because the festival, like many festivals, is on Downing's main street, to stop the village, the town, coming to a standstill.
Yeah, look, I mean, as you say, Greg, there was a good bit of coverage on this after the weekend of the 12th. I had, and as had the businesses and residents of Downing's, really had extensive engagement with one another, but also directly with the council and with the Gardaí. I think the response now to that has been a much more proactive operation for the bank holiday weekend. The bank holiday weekend typically isn't as busy as the weekend of the 12th, but it is still necessary to have a proactive operation in place there. So the beach will be closed to vehicles over the course of the weekend, and that is in direct response to the weekend of the 12th. There were so many public order complaints and incidents, and this is the Gardaí and the council's response to that. There'll also be a one-way traffic system in place through the town. And I think that what we're seeing is a more coordinated effort from the Gardaí and council. And that's exactly what I was calling for, because the residents and businesses were calling for that. after the weekend of the 12th.
And in a classic case of you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, I'm a bit peed off, I can't drive onto the beach and it's your fault.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm sure, look, there will be plenty of people complaining that they can't get onto the beach. But I think in the interest of public order, of course, and the interest of safety, it's the right move for this weekend. We need to see how it goes. I will just say as well that efforts are ongoing in the community amongst the businesses and the community groups to try and secure additional parking from a landowner there. I hope that that comes to fruition, because that will really play an integral part in making this whole operation work over the coming weekend.
OK, thanks for your time. That's Councillor Declan Meehan there touching on a couple of subjects for us. You'll also be able to hear more from, just it's a coincidence of timing, Councillor Meehan and his husband, Porrig. Porrig also was very influential in progressing the surgical hub. But I sat down with him recently for an episode of the Greg Hughes podcast. And it's an interesting chat about, you know, life in the public eye, I suppose, life as a same-sex couple in Donegal in Ireland. And it's quite encouraging, really, their view of that. We have progressed a great deal. But also, too, there's a bit in there about, you know, the reality of being in the public eye and on social media. And just really learning a little bit more about them, which is what the podcast is all about. And we've got 30 plus episodes available for you to listen to whenever you like. And we've got a loyal following, and we really, really do appreciate that. I can tell you last week's episode, hugely popular, Mary Coughlan, learning more a little bit about her. I challenge politicians and people on this programme all of the time on various issues because it's a current affairs show. The podcast is a different setting where we get to learn a little bit more about the person themselves, you know, and Mary Coughlan, as I said to her during the podcast, you know, she's very got tough exterior, but like so many of us, has endured, you know, an awful lot of loss in her life, thrusting her into the public eye. It probably was to come anyway, but perhaps it came before she anticipated. Her life as, you know, the second most powerful politician in the country, and also now her role within and the head of GEA. So that's the Mary Coughlan podcast. That's available for you on our website, or just search the Greg Hughes podcast, and they are available wherever you listen to your podcast. And we switch it up because on Friday we have the legend that is Mairéadh Ní Mooney. She was in studio with us talking about her career, talking about her life as a musician, her life as a mum, talking about how they're incredibly popular in places like Japan. Beautiful stories of the front row of a concert in Japan as she sang Ascuelga, and people in the front able to sing along or just sitting in absolute silence in wonder at this music, and what the plans are for the future. That's a lovely chat. I really did enjoy that. That's Mairéadh Ní Mooney on the Greg Hughes podcast coming up on Friday at 11 a.m. We'll have a preview for that. Will we bring the preview for that forward till tomorrow, Caroline? I think we possibly will, because we're in Dunloe on Friday. Now, we are broadcasting from Sweeney's Hotel on Main Street, Dunloe. It's part of the Merry from Dunloe Festival, between 9 and 11 on Friday. And we've got lots of people to talk to. And we're going to just chill out. It's just going to be talking and music. That's all you're going to get from me on Friday, just chat and music. We've got fantastic live music for you, and some great guests lined up already. You can come along, by the way, just sit around and see a live show in the workings, and also listen to some brilliant live music. So that's on Friday between 9 and 11, the Greg Hughes Show on the road down from Sweeney's Hotel on Main Street on Dunloe, part of the Merry from Dunloe Festival. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Jive Time with David's coming from there. You can check out the details on our Facebook page. So David's there this afternoon on there Friday. So looking forward to that. What else is there? What else can I plug? No, that's it. I know what I wanted to do. Play requests. Cahill Buchanan in Newtown Cunningham, happy birthday today from your brothers. Jimmy O'Donnell in Kirkstown Letterkenny, 70 today. Hope you have a great birthday from the Saturday Morning Breakfast Club crew. Fantastic. And one final mention coming up between now and 11, Paul McLaughlin, our gardener, is taking your questions. That's coming up around 10:45. So if you have any questions about your garden, I'm interested to find out now. You know, I've had amazing, and I'll say so myself, because I actually did get them from McLaughlin's. Paul did them up for me. Amazing flower boxes. Absolutely stunning. These things just exploded out of the box. they're just not quite as fulsome as they are now. So what do I need to do to try and sort of maybe get the end of the summer out of them? Will they rebud? All that kind of stuff. So it's not just about if you've got a big fancy garden. Maybe you've got a little sunroom, a little balcony. You want to do something with it like that. Maybe you want to grow some veggies with the kids. Whatever you want to do, anything to do with getting your fingers green in whatever space you have, get your questions into us. 086 60 25000. Now we're joined on the programme by Deepta McMullen, who's Director of Animals in Need. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Right. Now, you're trying your best there at Animals in Need in Donegal, but are struggling to keep up with demand. So what's driving...
We are, yeah.
What do you think's driving the demand for services, Deepta?
It's basically people not new to animals. Like, what we are seeing at the moment is outrageous amount of kittens found. This is happening every summer, you know, during kitten season. There's so many kittens found on the road, you know, just showing up at houses, you know, kittens just looking for comfort, for food, you know, for a way to survive, basically.
Yeah. What do you do in that situation? Because I can imagine, and even in this conversation, people might say, oh, right, Animals in Need, Donegal, taking kittens because there's a whole go of them close to us. Do you know that sort of a way? So how do you, in the absence of...
Exactly.
Yeah, in the absence of a more neutering, how do you resolve that?
I mean, look, the only thing we can advise is, you know, like, obviously, you know, we're getting a lot of people saying, look, my estate is overrun. I mean, we need people to be responsible. We need people to understand that animals in need cannot, you know, we just do not have the manpower to go in and lift all the kittens, lift all the cats. That's not the way out of it. The only way out of the problem is to get cats neutered. So if their state is overrun with feral cats, get them neutered before there's more kittens. Now, we are happy to help with cost and all. Like, last week alone, we had 17 in for TNR, you know, that Animals in Need is covered. That's over €1,000 there alone. So, you know, we are working really actively to help people, to help them, you know, resolve the problem. And we have a lot of money invested in humane cat traps that we have throughout the county. So we have here in Donegal Town, we have in Mough, we have in Letterkenny Convoy. So, you know, to kind of cut down the driving for people. But yes, people have to take the animals to the vet, but they do have to come back to
I'm correct in saying, too, that there is also an awful lot of calls in relation to dogs. And at least some of that, because we are in holiday season, is people not having a plan for their pets before they head away. And I suppose in a panic or consciously, they're seeing Animals in Need Donegal as some sort of a handy free kennels option. Is that surely not happening, is it?
We are seeing that. We are seeing that. You only have to open Facebook and you see ones there. Like, there was a woman yesterday, or a person, I don't know if it was a woman actually, was looking for somewhere. Her dog had been in kennels for a couple of weeks and she preferred somebody to look after it in a private home. She wasn't going to be there for a while yet. See, the problem is people leave it to the last minute. People are going away tomorrow, kind of thing. So it's left to the very last minute and it puts pressure on us because they kind of go, but we have nowhere else. We have nothing else to do. We're going tomorrow. We have people moving houses. What we have seen, which is a very, very sad situation, is the whole Inishowen area. We are getting a lot of animals from up there with the whole mica crisis because a lot of them are having to move in to rented accommodation. And there's a lot of landlords do not allow the animals.
Very interesting point. Or they might be moving into a mobile home or what have you and simply not have the space.
Rented accommodation, exactly. And, you know, it's a family pet and, you know, it's not what they are wanting to do, but, you know, they've been forced to do it. And that's something, you know, people are not thinking of when they see about the whole mica. You know, they think, oh, people move out, they get the house rebuild. You know, there's a lot of other things, not just the financial cost, yeah, but, you know, the emotional with the animals as
the
well.
The reason I'm speaking to you is that, and I would say this is one of the toughest decisions to make when you're in the business of caring for animals, is to close the doors for intakes until the 12th of August. And this literally is to allow space to care for what you have, and also to allow volunteers a bit of space for themselves, such as the deluge of contacts.
It is absolutely. I mean, our volunteers, we have a handful of fantastic volunteers working flat out. Like, we are getting so many calls, WhatsApp messages and all every day, like 60 to 70. Even the weekend there, we get on a Sunday 30 to 40 messages and calls there that has to be dealt with. And a lot of them is people looking for us to take in animals. And if we say, listen, I'm sorry, we don't have space, there's a complete lack of understanding of why we can't take them in. Or, sure, it's only a small kitten. Surely you'll fit this one in. It is very sad. It is very distressing for our volunteers having to say, listen, I'm sorry, but we just don't have the space. The problem is a lot of the kittens that are being found, they're injured when they're found. They're falling out of car engines. Mm. They've been in accidents. Not only the injured ones, but a lot of them, even though they look healthy, are all, you know, a lot of them, they're incubating illnesses.
Yeah, of course.
They have viruses coming in, so they all need to be kept separate.
Nice.
So it's not just a case saying, oh, well, the kennel space is fit for five kittens.
Mm.
You can't just lump five kittens in as they come in, because they're all just going to spread from one to the other.
Okay, very complex,
you know, really
complicated problem.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll tell you really what we need to do as a society is to sort of understand that these are animals, and we have to, we're going the wrong direction. But for now, Geeta, thank you very much indeed. Geeta McMullen, Director of Animal Needs, Donegal. Now, we get quite a few calls onto this programme about, you know, new modern interventions that can be there in terms of, you know, hair loss or weight control, weight loss. And we're joined by Dr. Arsalan Shahid to discuss this. But I also want to talk about a new building, a new business that you may have seen popping up in Letterkenny, because Dr. Shahid is of ERA Consultants Family Clinic at the Lower Main Street in Letterkenny. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me, and good morning to all of your listeners here. Yes, we have opened up recently on 17th of July at 108 Lower Main Street. It's ERA Consultants and Family Clinic, and it's me. I'm the general practitioner here, and I have a partner and who's a consultant ophthalmologist, Mr. Akram. And we work together.
A consultant of?
Ophthalmologist.
Ophthalmologist. So yes. What would his expert field be?
So he's an eye specialist.
Ah, very good.
Yeah, so we do cater for all different eye conditions, cataracts, laser treatment at the clinic, you know. So
yeah.
We do.
Okay, yeah. And why did you decide to open this business? Did you see a gap there, or was there something that you thought needed complementing?
So in the town, like I was working as a salary GP at a practice in town, and I used to hear about like people haven't been able to access to the GPs yet, you know. So even at my own practice as well, people come here every 3 to 4 different people, like holding medical cards, and they don't have a GP for, say, last 2 or 3 years, you know. So it is the need of the town to get more practices open. So I felt that there was a need there, and so we joined up and we opened up the practice. At the moment, we are accepting the private patients, but we are hoping to get the HSC clearance by, I would say, late October, early November, and we will be starting accepting the medical cards as well, you know.
Yes, and is it unusual for, and whilst this is, you know, a clinic, and it's ERA Consultants and Family Clinic, is it effectively a G? I'm trying to break it down for listeners. Yes. It is a GP's with the extra layer of eye speciality. Is that how you might frame it? How might you frame it in terms of, so our listeners know precisely what?
So our clinic is we open Monday to Friday at 10 a.m. till 7:30 in the morning. Yes, from the general practitioner point of view, so I'm a general practitioner there, and he's a consultant who's my partner there. So he works there three days a week, and he looks after the eye specialty. But most part of the general practitioner is dealt by myself, you know. So
yeah, and you seem to want to particularly have an emphasis on healthy families.
Yes.
Why is that important to you?
I would say the healthy families make a healthy society as well. So I do advocate for healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, and you know, whenever people come in and they have different issues, like for say weight or struggling with the weight or struggling with a healthy lifestyle, I do sit down with them, have a great chat with them, and tell them how they can switch. It can be a bit difficult for some people to switch all over, but I would say it's really necessary as well at the same time, because as soon as if you don't switch, we can easily get the chronic diseases, you know. So if you need to avoid the chronic diseases, it's really important to be on the healthy side.
Yeah. We read a study today from an organisation representing GPs which shows that we are below where we need to be in terms of GP cover. Some counties are really quite stretched, commuter belt as well. Donegal, I think it's more localised where there are issues rather than across the county. But in terms of, you know, we hear waits of 2 weeks in some cases. How likely or how long might someone wait for an appointment at your clinic, for an example?
So my clinic is a walk-in clinic at the moment. So anyone can walk in between 10 and 7:30 every day, Monday to Friday. And on Saturdays, we are open on 12 to 5. So anyone who doesn't have a GP or who is over here in Donegal visiting from any other county and who's seeking any medical complaint can just walk in, and we will be happy to see them and get them seen at the same time, you know. So the wait times are not longer, so the people are seen very quickly.
Right, okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, now we also wanted to tap into your expertise because we were contacted by a few people who were reading a new study published by the British Medical Journal linking the use of weight loss and diabetes jabs to an increased risk of hair loss. Yeah. Now, there is a risk and a side effect of any drug. And the way I would view it, and I'm not a doctor, if you're taking one of these jabs for diabetes and there is a risk of hair loss, and in fact, if you begin to lose your hair, you have to make a decision. You have to say, do I want to tackle the diabetes and extend my life quite significantly, or do I deal with hair thinning or hair loss? Yes. That's a reality. I think people, when drugs are fashionable, don't really want to talk about the side effects, and every drug has a side effect, right?
Yes. So, Greg, you're quite right. So every drug which has been manufactured does come up with its benefits and the risks associated with it. So this study came into me. So Caroline, one of your radio presenters, reached out to me, and she said that this study has been published in British Medical Journal. So this study was done in University of Pennsylvania, was between January 2019 and September 2024. And they kind of selected two groups of people and who were using this weight loss jabs commonly for different brand names come in, you know. So so they selected a group of like 12,000 people who were using the jab as compared to someone's who were using dapagliflozin. So they find that like if someone was on dapagliflozin, they would have a risk of a hair loss for, say, 4 out of 1,000 people. But someone who was using the weight loss jabs were having like 8.6 or something out of 1,000. So there was an increased risk found out on the study there. But at the same time, I would say that coming from a medical opinion, I won't say that we should be dissed away from it, like we don't need it, because people do need those as well at the same time, because there are people who would have cardiovascular risk factors. Like, you know, I would recommend it to them who have like BMI of more than 27 and they have a cardiovascular risk factor for, say, diabetes, high blood pressure, ischemic heart disease or high cholesterol. Even a smoker as well, so you know, even smoking is a modifiable, you know, but And also above 30 straight away, without even being, if a BMI is more than 30 straight away, you do qualify for it. You know?
And I think the low level risk of hair loss really all factors into whether you're taking these drugs for an absolute medical necessity or perhaps you want to lose a bit of weight, if you know what I mean. And I think, as I say, any medicine, there's going to be a cohort of the population. Okay, brilliant stuff. Thank you for that. Reassuring. And people can contact yourselves or anyone else who have concerns in relation to that. Listen, good luck with the business. It's Air Consultants and Family Clinic, located at 108 Lower Main Street, Letterkenny. Walk-ins, you mentioned. Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Saturday, 12 to 5.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
So in other words, if you are visiting the area, maybe you've been told on a Friday, I can see you Tuesday, you can walk into your place on a Saturday, theoretically. Okay, listen, good luck with it.
Thanks for
thank
sorry.
You so
thank
much
you.
For your time. That's thank Dr. Asalan Shaheed of Air Consultants Family Clinic, Lower Main Street, Letterkenny. We are in studio with Dr. Paul McLaughlin, Gardener at Ballacter Garden Centre, Mountain Top. I mean, you haven't qualified as a doctor, have you?
Not quite. Well, it's all about the life experience.
Yeah, exactly. A doctor of life, man. Right, now, I have in front of me a bag of spuds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last time you were in here, you whipped out these two spuds. And when you were leaving, I went to grab them because I was thinking, okay, I can have a bit of fun with them at home, maybe make something nice to eat, whatever it might be. And you whipped them off me as if they were made of gold, right?
Yes.
But you've come back with mm-hmm. more of these spuds.
Yes, sir.
Why are they special?
They're special. They are a spud that was actually classified as been extinct for a while there. They are, the variety of them would be known as lumper spuds, which were the ones basically were common in Ireland in the lead up to the famine. Whenever the blight came along and affected all the spuds, they were the
you mean when affected. When you mean when the British took them in, to England?
Yes, right. Okay. Well, they didn't take the spuds. That brings me back to the spuds. Those particular spuds there, one of the landlords famously said, well, they'd be good enough to feed the tenants, but I don't know if they're good enough for the cows.
Yeah. So see the size of them here. Is that the size of them traditionally?
No, I probably dug them a wee bit early.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. They're actually, they were extinct for about 100 years there and they were brought back again.
How? Genetically? Like, so DNA
just people
and
didn't
stuff?
Bother. People didn't bother about them, kind of, and the variety kind of went.
Yeah.
Just went out of fashion as much as anything else.
So these are called lumpers.
Yes.
And these are, when we talk of the famine, these are the spuds that would have been in the ground predominantly at that time.
Yes, absolutely.
Why did we favour them? Are they easier grown, drier, better for you know, poundies? Why?
Yes, the reason they grow in very bad ground.
Yeah.
And they have a huge yield with them. So they had a huge yield and they grew in very bad ground, so they're suitable for the west of Ireland, basically. Mm. So they were, and very much dictated by the weather. Apparently, on a wet year, they were horrible and nasty, whereas in a good year, they were actually quite good.
Okay.
But it was for the yield. They were just a cheap way of feeding a big population.
Okay. And have you eaten these yet?
I haven't, no.
I
only actually got 5 of them this year, 5 seed spuds.
Wow.
So I grew them there, and basically I've probably twice that many, but I might not actually eat any this year. I might just put them back in again to get a bigger.
Okay, so these are actually really quite valuable. Is anyone else growing them in the country?
They were brought back 7 years ago, sort of as part of a historical project by Glens of Antrim Potatoes. And it was from the labs over in Rifle.
And do we know how they got the sort of the original spud if they had been sort of out of commission for so long?
That I don't know. Whether it was sort of, whether somebody had been sort of bringing them all along.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm not actually sure how they actually got them back again.
Yeah, of course. It's fascinating, though, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Really, but it was sort of, that was the only big part of this sort of food production now is the genetic diversity of the spuds, I suppose, that you have lots of different varieties. Back in the famine times, they were relying on one. Mm. Whenever a pathogen came in that actually killed off that one, then
so
everybody was.
So when you, do you think this is kind of original as to how they would have looked and the and what have you.
Pretty much from like even from drawings and stuff.
It's really
actually looks good. They're quite,
it's quite interesting. It feels really
anomalies, but if
I know they're come out this year. You grew these this year, but it just feels a little bit historic, if you know what I mean, because for generations they simply didn't exist.
Yes.
But famine time and before, this was the staple.
Absolutely. That really 3 times a day.
Wow. So, okay, brilliant stuff. Right. Now's the time to be gathering up your ain, folks.
Yes, absolutely.
We're in a hosepipe ban, but you know what? There's plenty of it falling. If you can't trust the local authorities to capture it, Why not try it yourself?
Yes, absolutely. Now would be a good time to actually be capturing rain if you could, if you have water butts, or even, we always chat with the cage tanks there, that sort of thing. Like a day like today, there's a huge amount of water about, and that would really sustain a garden for weeks.
Yeah.
If you captured enough of it today. Like.
And we could, you know, use butts and cages. I mean, really what you could be talking about is cutting your downpipe and sticking a blue barrel in underneath it.
Pretty much.
I mean, it depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, exactly. So back say, even 20 years ago, a lot of houses around for toilets, even for washing stuff, that was at the blue barrel at the bottom of that.
Yeah. And, of course, too, we want to reduce the amount of water. You can still, of course, care for your plants. It's the same old advice, isn't it? Early morning, late at night. You know, we are going to get into some... It's like Saturday's going to be a nice day, and because it's the summer, it's going to be a nice day, right? It's not going to be like a winter's nice day.
Yeah, pretty much if you're watering with the watering can, they reckon water sort of a good bit, maybe less frequently. And morning or evening, don't do it in the middle of the day because a lot of the water ends up evaporating off on you.
Is there anything we can add to sort of hold the water in situ? So in other words, it doesn't roll off or run through?
Yes, within pots and stuff like that.
Are they my spuds, by the way? Or do I have to give them back to you?
No, you can keep them.
No, go on.
Right.
No,
tell you what I'll do.
No.
I'll bring you up a bag of different ones.
Right, okay, sorry, you don't hand me anything you don't want me to take home, because I was looking at them thinking, and you're not answering my question, you're looking at me moving your spuds.
No, sorry. No, yeah, tell you, I'll bring you up a lot of home gears tomorrow.
Do you know what, because those spuds there will produce, will you plant them? They're not seedlings, are they?
Yeah, that'll be the plan.
So, in other words, each one of those will produce, I'll get a bag off you next year, how's that?
Perfect.
We'll play the long game.
I'll throw you up a bag tomorrow.
Right, so mulch, add a mulch to your plants, and also, too, you might not need to water your plants. Sometimes we talk about them even in wet weather if they're sheltered, but they could be getting plenty of water. I find those spuds absolutely fascinating. I don't know why. Right, so also too, a big advocate of growing your own food.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, now's a good time to talk about that.
Yeah, last week at the courgettes there just was to show actually the difference in terms of just you get different colours, especially if you're trying to get kids to
eat food. Yeah, one looked like a pepper. A straight pepper.
Yeah, pretty much. It was just the different varieties of stuff, you know.
Taste-wise,
probably similar.
Yeah.
But it's just, they always say you eat with your eyes. So a lot of the time, a wee bit different. Like, even you get purple carrots now, stuff like that.
But I think if you grow it your own, I think you eat with your eyes if you're going to a shop. And, you know, you go to the vegetable counter and everything, it's like just a stock photo.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you sort of know the background to it, you would be more inclined to eat something that doesn't have the traditional, you know...
the glossy look.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, like waxy peppers.
Whenever you're the person pulls it out of the ground, like you can see what's gone into it and everything else, it would encourage you to grow your own stuff in that sense.
Yeah. The yellow courgette it's a lovely looking thing, actually. It did look like a pepper. Is there anything we could be planting now, though?
Planting now, yes. You can put in cabbages, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Now,
anything interesting?
Anything interesting?
But people, I suppose, at this stage now are looking after the tomatoes, aren't they?
Pretty much. Looking after the tomatoes, and you're kind of harvesting at this stage, if you know what I mean. But run around at the sort of start of September, really, would be planting again. Your onions, even peas, beans, that sort of stuff you can plant away at that time of year.
Yeah, now the flower pots that I got from you, absolutely stunning, and they still are stunning, but you can sort of see is there anything I need to be doing for them now? Can I get a second flush?
Yes, pretty much. If you give them a good deadheading now, just actually tidy them up a bit, and
might do that this afternoon.
By this stage of the year, sort of things, some parts grow bigger than others, they get a wee bit straggly. So if you just give them a general shaping now at this stage, keep everything sort of uniform.
But they might flower again, is it maintaining what you have?
Oh, no, they will flower again.
Really?
Yeah. Give them a good deadhead and now they may be a wee bit lackluster for a week.
Yeah.
But you will get...
They're not at lackluster stage yet. I've got in early. I haven't sort of abandoned them, to speak. But so they'll come on again, because we're going to get a nice spell of weather at the start of August
too. Yes, apparently so. So now we shot a miracle grow now as well.
Okay.
I'll actually bring them all.
All right, I'll do that. I'll not mix it up with the weed killer.
Yeah.
Black spots on a rose. What can we do?
Black spot on a rose. The likes of today's weather is notorious for bringing on black spot, and that's a fungal infection, probably related to your potato blight in a sense. What you can do with it is you can get sprays to keep it at bay, but generally keep the plant well fed. It's better able to fight off the black spot. And whenever you prune your roses in the autumn time, clear away all the debris from around them and even rake the soil, because the black spot lies about in the soil. And as it rains over the winter, it splashes back up on the plant.
Gets you.
So if you actually start good plant hygiene.
It's wet and humid at the moment,
yes,
which is the perfect storm for that type of stuff, isn't it? Right. There is a scabby skin on my potatoes. Why? And can I do anything about it?
Scab and potatoes, a lot of time I would link that to actually dry ground. At some season of the potatoes been growing, they've actually dried out a wee bit. So probably maintaining water through the season if you have a small patch would be, and a bit of crop rotation, because scab can sort of...
What is crop rotation?
Crop rotation is basically not growing the same thing in the same patch.
Okay, so year. If it was spuds this year, stick exactly. something else in or move it to another...
Ideally, they reckon you sort of do every like fourth year. Maybe people do 2 years, yeah. miss three. But
potatoes, because we eat them, I think we're more aware that they are really quite sensitive to their environment as they grow.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is quite interesting. So you can get just a bad yield for a year and that's it. And the best spuds, best spuds next year.
Absolutely. They can be very fickle like that, all right.
Yeah, Greg, can you ask Paul where can I buy Irish wildflower seed and when is the best time and way to sow it? Thank you. Well, I got some off you, I think, at some point a couple of years ago, didn't I? Is it locally available or is it an online job or what's the crack?
Generally, you get it locally as well. If wildflowers tend to be quite expensive, and if I was going to actually spend a good bit of money on it, they're a company called wildflowers.ie. They're based in Kildare, I think. Kildare or Carlow, I'm not sure which actually. But what you have to do with them is you have to actually send photographs of the site and they will advise you about what best to plant. Really? So if you're actually going and spending money on it, maybe it's as well to get their sort of professional advice.
The stuff you gave me was like it took, mm-hmm. but you'd need to know also what you're growing in terms of how much space it will take up, how big it might get, stuff like that too, right?
Yes, absolutely. So now, like I say, companies like that who specialise in it can advise you in terms of your site. Yeah. But you can just buy boxes in the local garden centre and a lot of the time they work out just as well as anything else, you know?
Yeah, it's like everything. If it wants to grow, it will. And if it doesn't, it won't. Millipedes, how do I eradicate them? Now, they don't want to deal with them. This caller is not messing about. He wants, or she wants eradication.
Yes, nuke them, basically. Yeah, exactly. You do get products which will sort of kill them off. It'd be quite harsh chemicals in the sense. Because the millipedes have the sort of the exoskeleton, they can be very hard to get rid of. But if you didn't want to sort of eradicate them, you get a product called neem oil. It's like N-E-E-M. But if you spread it around your house, it doesn't actually eradicate them, but it actually, they don't like it, so they stay away.
Repels them more
exactly,
than that, right, okay.
It can be notoriously hard to kill.
We go away for a couple of months each year, which is lovely, usually February and March. Do you have to look after a polytunnel all year round?
Suppose if you're getting the most out of your polytunnel, you would look after it all year round, in the sense that there's stuff you can grow all along, basically. But if you're going away February, March, you probably could be all right, you know, in the sense that a lot of people would just plant up from March on. So you could let your tunnel rest for them a couple of months.
The listener has a lovely hedge, well looked after here. But they want to take 4 to 6 inches off the top and 12 to 15 inches off the front. Can they do so? And if so, when's the best time to do it?
The 4 to 6 inches would be no problem. That looks like an Escalonia hedge, which is grand. If you cut it back now, you're going to leave it very sort of woody and sticky, if you know what I mean. Yes. So the 4 to 6 inches off the top wouldn't be a problem. Just it'll take a wee while to recover in the spring. But the 12 to 15 inches, or whatever they said, off the face would be very drastic. And you're going to end up with just wood at that stage. Mm. Probably will come back. What I would be more inclined to do would be do that in stages over the course of maybe 3 years. Take it back like 6 inches this year, let it recover.
Because it might not fill in for next year.
I would doubt whether it would fill in next year.
All right,
in a couple of years' time.
Yeah. It's a beautiful hedge, but someone's got a notion they want to do something there.
Yes.
All right. Let me see. Hi, Paul. I decided this was finally going to be the year. I had a lovely display of potted flowers outside the front of the house, but I think I may have done more harm than good. I watered them during the hot sunshine, and now they look burnt. Have I completely ruined them, or is there a way to revive them?
Generally, no. Much like I said earlier on, what I would do now is give them a general tidy.
And step back 6 feet and have a look at them.
Yes, exactly. You know? So a general tidy.
Like, none of us look great if you get really close. Quite do you possibly. Know what I mean, right?
But no, a general tidy, give them a good deadhead and maybe a wee feed and they should bounce back because there's still plenty of life and growth left in them.
If I want colour for what's left of this summer, is it too late to... plant flowers, and if it isn't, what could I plant to get a bloom of colour now for the last 6-7 weeks we might have?
Generally, it's never too late. So it's not their sort of all season long you get flowers of some sort. The sort of summer bedding, you would struggle to get it at this stage, but anything you can get probably in your local supermarket, that'd be perfect. And for September, dahlias is always a good one. Most garden centres have good stock of them in at the minute.
Yeah, it's just a different way, the way they do business versus how a garden centre does.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's down to that. It's not, okay, like, which makes sense. Brilliant stuff, Paul. Thanks for getting through so many questions and bringing up those spuds, which feel, as I say, you know, historic lumpy spuds. Lumper spuds. Okay. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, Mountaintop. Of course, that's tied to history. You also do a podcast, history podcast thing as well. Tell people where they can listen to that.
Yes, on TikTok, there's Donegal Lesser Known Tales. Sort of do wee, I travel a lot for work, so just generally do wee sort of interesting things to see along the road, good as much stuff. As anything else.
Simple as, all right. Thanks, yep. Paul. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great day, everyone.